loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by co-host John Kiriakou. In our first hour, we take a look at two big stories. First, the controversy over Google's censorship of alternative media outlets continues. We're talking here about RT and Sputnik, as the internet giant appears to be attempting to play both sides of this highly controversial issue. And then the police state in America continues to grow as more departments adopt the use of the controversial Stingray surveillance system, and the Trump administration escalates its war on immigrants by granting local police departments new powers to harass and arrest those suspected of being undocumented. But first, we turn to Google. We are joined from Lund, Sweden, by Dr. Jan Åberg, director of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research. And we're joined from San Diego, California, by Dr. Robert Epstein. He is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. Welcome, Dr. Åberg and Dr. Epstein.
Thank you.
Dr. Jan Åberg, you have an article in CounterPunch. Why is Google's Eric Schmidt so afraid? Of course, Eric Schmidt is Google's chief executive. What do you mean by the headline? What does your story talk about?
Well, it also says, and what he should be afraid of. Well, what I thought was somebody must have put pressure on him as a businessman who, you know, should profess freedom of the media, Google being a site for knowledge and for people who seek knowledge. And he must be afraid that either that his company is becoming part of a political, if you will, information war in a time when there is a new Cold War with Russia. And his very clear statement is that this deranking, as he called it, he didn't call it re-ranking, but deranking, was to hit to Russian media. Now, what I think he should be afraid of is that if millions of people find out that one single very wealthy, very powerful man can kind of, you know, decide what the rest of us are supposed to see when we search Google, we'll go elsewhere. And you know, since it's also a money-making machine, this might be something that he might reconsider. I consider it very, very sad if that search engine is becoming, you know, a forum for political games and, if you will, censorship.
Well, Dr. Epstein, that's really the issue here. You know, the Republican Party and the conservative movement in this country talks a lot about competition, that competition is always best for the marketplace. Dr. Åberg makes a point here that maybe this is how we get around this censorship, is with good old-fashioned competition. If Americans cannot get the news that they're seeking by going through Google, perhaps they can get the news that they're seeking going through something like Bing. You're an expert on these kinds of algorithms. Can you tell us a little bit how that might work?
I wish I could tell you how that would work, but it's impossible. It doesn't work. It can't work because there is no search engine that provides the quality of search results that Google does. This is because Google's index to web pages is at least three times as large as the next largest index, which would be the Bing index, which is maintained by Microsoft. So there is no other place to go. I mean, everyone has who's concerned about Google and Google's politics and Google's censorship, certainly. Oh, and Google's tracking, of course, and Google's manipulations, and you know, on and on. Tries alternative search engines. But they just don't work as well. There is one piece of good news, which is that you can use startpage.com, which doesn't advertise, so no one's ever heard of it, but you can use startpage.com to give you full access to Google's index without anyone tracking you. So that's good news. But other than that, no one can really compete with Google. And in fact, let me complicate matters by pointing out that more and more where you think you're using an alternative to Google, you're actually just using Google. So for example, Yahoo now draws most or all of its search results from Google.
Doggone it. I thought we were onto something here.
One of the things that's happened is that the Google CEO, Eric Schmidt, did in fact say, that he was going to, they were going to de-rank and delist RT and Sputnik.
Yes.
They said that, and then the Russians said, we're going to retaliate. If you're going to censor our media, we're going to censor Western media, U.S. media, or we're going to take, they didn't say censor, we're going to take retaliatory actions. They weren't specific. But it was clear that the media that they would be targeting for retaliation was not only Voice of America, not only, in other words, state-owned American government media, but also big U.S. mainstream or corporate-owned media companies like CNN or CNN International. And now we have, just a few days later, Google's vice president says, we don't change our algorithm to de-rank websites. Now, when Eric Schmidt was testifying last week, he said, quote, we are working on detecting and de-ranking those kind of sites. It's basically RT and Sputnik, Schmidt said during a Q&A session at the Halifax International Security Forum in Canada on Saturday, when asked about whether Google facilitates Russian propaganda. So he's challenged. He's challenged by the media, as Google has been challenged by the media and when it was called before Congress, and said, are you really doing enough to stop Russian influence? And at first they said, well, it's not that big of an influence. And then under pressure, Google and Facebook said, well, yeah, we underestimated. We didn't realize how profound Russian influence was. Then he goes ahead and says, under the pressure of this media query at the Halifax conference, we're going to de-rank and we're going to detect and de-rank those kind of sites. And of course, RT and Sputnik are very popular on social media. And now the Russians say, well, guess what? We'll retaliate. And then the Google vice president says, we don't do that. We don't mess with the algorithm.
Somebody's lying.
Or they're just backpedaling. In other words, Dr. Epstein, your view is that Google has too much power. And I don't think any of us here would disagree with you one little bit. But it also seems that Google doesn't know which way to play at the moment because of the swirling politics. And it is pure politics at this point.
Well, first of all, let's get one thing straight here. That last statement that you mentioned from a Google vice president saying we don't derank, that's an outright lie. I mean, outright lie. But there is a massive evidence that Google deranks every single day. They derank, they demote. They literally remove companies that violate, quote unquote, their terms of service. They just remove them from the search rankings. A famous case of this, which did make the news a couple of years ago, was JCPenney, the big retailer store here. Google deranked JCPenney very dramatically. I think more than 100 slots, which has a big effect on business. So let's just get that one thing straight. That is an outright lie. They do this all the time. I checked Alexa, by the way, to see whether they have in fact deranked Sputnik and RT in recent months, and found a very dramatic drop in March. But nothing really since then. So you dropped dramatically in March, but you're still at that low level that you were at since April. So not much has happened since April. There's no sign of further deranking at the moment, at least not yet.
And what about other websites, alternative news websites? You know, we hear complaints from the publishers, the proprietors of websites like Reader Supported News or Truth Dig or Truth Out or Consortium News and many, many others, who say that as soon as the Washington Post accused them of being fake news sites or news sites that were in the pay of Moscow or were pushing Russian inspired propaganda, that their rankings plummeted. And in fact, it's actually damaged their businesses and their ability to continue publishing. Are you seeing anything like that, or are these just isolated incidents, Dr. Oberg?
No, I mean, we're a peace organization, research, independent, not financed by any governments or corporations. We go to Syria, we go to Iran, we went to Yugoslavia, etc. And I can see when I search my foundation's name, it's less hits than it was before. I can also see as a commentator myself how, let's say, alternative narratives than the one we've been suffering since 2011 about Syria is totally closed in the Western mainstream media to get out with pictures. I was the only one from the Nordic countries. There were no Western media in Aleppo last year, 10 to 14th of December. Nobody in the Western media have been interested in this story, although I have sent quite a few messages about this because, you know, it's a little bit, if you're a conflict expert, you know a little bit about how complex these conflicts are. So that was always possible before in Yugoslavia, elsewhere, Iraq, where I've worked, everywhere I've been working, it was always possible to get out with some kind of another message because media would say, oh, this guy has been there. He has seen and heard things. He's interviewed people even at rather high level. Whether we agree with him or not is not the important thing. But here is somebody who's been there and has another view. And not because I have left or right wing or whatever. I have another view because I'm a Gandhian. And secondly, because I do conflict analysis and not violence reporting and war reporting like all journalists and media do. They don't understand the underlying conflicts. They only understand the violence which you can take pictures of. Now, that openness has disappeared. And I also think it's very interesting to see now what the West is unable to accept now is that there are other media outlets, whereas they had a monopoly before, whether, you know, Radio Free Europe or BBC or CNN, now there are others coming up. And then this tendency to break, you know, to call everything propaganda that is not in accordance with Western media is a very dangerous trend for a Western world, which is getting weaker in the world community. So I must say I'm really concerned, much larger than Google as such, general trends that are going on at the moment when it comes to international affairs and the reporting of them. And finally, let me say, I think it's a stupid idea if there's somebody in Russia who thinks you should do the same. Read your Gandhi, do something else, open up much more and show a model instead of doing what your opponent does. Because if you do what the opponent does, you become as stupid as he is.
That's the voice of Dr. Jan Oberg. He's the director of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research. We're also speaking with Dr. Robert Epstein. He is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. John Kiriakou, and then back to Dr. Epstein, it seems like there's a few tracks here that we have to pay attention to. One is the immense power of Google or Facebook. This is the research, in such imperatively important research that Dr. Epstein has been doing. These companies, privately owned companies, have amassed enormous power to communicate and to influence our communications and to determine what it is that we see and read, and also what we think, in fact, based on search rankings and other ways that algorithms work. And Dr. Epstein has been a pioneer in this field. Then there's the subsidiary issue, which is also important and important right now, which is that Google is bending or appear to be bending first to political pressure from the United States to make a bigger deal than it originally thought in terms of Russia's use of RT or Sputnik or social media to influence the 2016 election. It said even last week, its CEO, Eric Schmidt, said, we're going to derank and delist Sputnik and RT. That's what he was talking about. We're going to change the algorithm. And then you have the Russians who said, look, if you do this to our media, we're going to retaliate. And Jan Oberg is arguing that that's stupid, that that's like just playing the same game.
Sure.
But I want to help the audience try to understand that wing of what's actually going on, because it hasn't gotten much media attention. The Russian government said, if you do this, if you deprioritize or underrank RT and Sputnik, we'll take retaliatory measures. There's a Russian media watchdog that is now monitoring changes in search results, showing pieces of news from Russian media after Google's explanation that it would derank and delist. Then the Russian government got in on the act. Here's the Russian telecom and mass communication deputy minister, Alexei Volin. He told Sputnik on Monday, under prioritizing The listing of RT and Sputnik may prompt Russia to bring up the issues related to the prohibited content in Google search results from the company allegedly that the company allegedly cannot influence. Quote, if they have prioritized or under-prioritized listing of RT and Sputnik news, it will mean that they, Google, deny the principles of technological neutrality, and we will have many questions to them regarding copyright, drugs, pornography, and a whole range of issues that we have not brought up yet, signifying that the Russians will use some pretext, at least, to limit Google's influence inside of Russia. I mean, sure. That's what's going on. It's a tit for tat, right?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
And so now Google has said, oh, we don't derank, we don't delist, we don't use algorithms. And Dr. Epstein, on its face, you're saying that's absolutely not true. I mean, Google does this routinely.
Of course they do. That's been well documented, and the company in particular cases has acknowledged that they do it. So it's completely absurd for them to deny that.
And the thing is, Dr. Epstein, if Google was a government entity, if it was and you know, we all use the internet, it's a fundamental part of our lives. If the government did something like this, we could carry out freedom of information records requests to find out whether it is that they derank, delist, use algorithms, manipulate it, talk about their communications with each other. In other words, they would have some sunshine on the communications in-house. But because it's Google, because it's a private corporate entity, the public doesn't have a right to their records. There is no freedom of information pertinent to private corporate entities. So how, Dr. Epstein, can we possibly learn whether they're telling the truth, as they obviously assert, or they're not telling the truth, as you assert?
Well, I mean, there's no transparency. There's no accountability. So those are very big problems. But, you know, in terms of documentation, there are plenty of court cases where, you know, where the records are available showing that Google very deliberately deranks, demotes, removes. I mean, we all know, for example, because of the current law in the EU, that people can complain to Google saying, please remove, you know, this search result, which says bad things about me. And as a result of that, Google now has a big department in the EU that removes more than 100,000 search results a year just based on people's complaints. So, of course they do these things, but you're right. There's no transparency. There's no accountability. We don't know exactly what they're doing. And of course, that's, you know, given the power that these people have to influence us, that's extremely troublesome.
And Dr. Epstein, what you're also telling us is that there was a noticeable decline in traffic to Russian media sites like Sputnik or RT back in March, but no noticeable change since then. I'm just wondering, is everything Google or Facebook saying right now, is it basically just for public consumption?
Well, I believe it is. I'm actually working on an article now about that issue, because I think right now Google and Facebook both, I think they're going along with you know, the concern that we see expressed by Congress, the concern that we see expressed in the media about Russia. I think they're going along with that. And they're trying to say, oh, yes, we're concerned, too. And don't worry, we're going to make some changes. I think they want us all looking at Russia being the problem to call attention away from what the bigger problems are. There are much bigger problems here in terms of Google's and Facebook's ability to track people, number one, and number two, to control people. And there's a wonderful, wonderful quote, since we're quoting Eric Schmidt today, from Schmidt. This was 2 days after the election last November. And what he said was, how people get their information, what they believe, what they don't, is the project for the next decade. Think about that. How people get their information, what they believe, what they don't, is the project for the next decade. That is Eric Schmidt, November 10th, 2016. I think they're going for the Russia stuff, and they appear to be going along with it. I think this just to distract us from what they're really doing.
You know, and Eric Schmidt is right. Very few of us here in the United States are putting up a fight over what information we should have access to. We should have access to whatever information we want. But here we have corporate giants, and by extension, Congress, telling us what we can and cannot read on the internet. That should be what the fight is about.
Yeah, and let's go back to Jen Oberg. Dr. Oberg, when you look at the big picture here, I know you're arguing that if Russia threatens retaliation, they're playing the same game and they should have a Gandhian approach. But on the other hand, Google just seems to have shifted its position in the face of a different kind of pressure, like one pressure versus another pressure. Like if there's no pressure on Google at all, and all they care about is really themselves, and they know that the greater pressure is from Washington and from Congress, might they not just do whatever they think best for their business model, their profits, or as Eric Schmidt said, using Dr. Epstein's quote, that they're on with the new project for the new century, new decade, which is to shape how all of us think?
Yes, and I mean, we're living in crisis times, and that's why those types of statements and those types of actions are really, really problematic and should be a reason for millions and millions of people's concern, because it's a monopolizing, it's a manipulation of huge sources of information. It's used by children and youth. It's used by media people. It's used by teachers. It shapes our worldview, and we have to stand up and secure that there is not one or two individuals here and there in the corporate world or whatever who can decide what we are supposed to see and not see. One way of doing it instead of retaliating would be to make a better search engine. Another thing would be to note it very clearly that Eric Schmidt was sitting at an international security conference with some of the military and most militarist people. He was not saying this out of the blue or a private conversation. He was saying it in a setting where Russia was pointed out as the main threat to the Western world. I was not there, but I've seen what the conference's website is telling us about what was said by whom and why. And so I'm repeating that we're getting back to the fact that we're in a new Cold War, which is totally unnecessary, and we have avoided the last 25 years, but Western policies and failures in warfare and whatever, and Russia coming back from being on its knees in 89 and onwards, is now causing a great alarm among the people in power in the Western world. The only mechanism of checking is a democratic society where people can do what we do now, freely discuss that this is impairing what is Western freedom, access to knowledge, etc. And let me just round off by saying, I'm not as afraid about fake news as so many other people seem to be. Fake news is an old thing, particularly when it comes to warfare and all that. You remember Khrushchev taking off his shoes in the UN in the 50s, which he didn't do, and things like that. What I'm much more concerned about is omitted and deranked news. It's the perspectives we don't get. It's the facts we don't get. And then, of course, the manipulation of marketing companies, etc., as in the case of Syria, which is influencing how people think. This is dead dangerous for democracy, and we'll end up in a much worse world than Orwell had the imagination to outline. So there are reasons to really discuss what we're discussing here and do alternatives to it. And therefore, I think a good response would also be an alternative to tit for tat, because tit for tat is making everybody, you know, as Gandhi said, again, a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye will one day make the whole world blind. I mean, I don't want an information society which is blinded by a few individuals or governments. I want a free world, even with fake news. Education is the only way to combat this. Learn, teach people how to use the net and be critical about the things they see. That's the only obstacle, not censorship. It's the only remedy, not censorship.
Well, with about 2 minutes left, I'd like to ask each of you, and let's start with Dr. Epstein. Is it possible then to launch a new search engine, one that doesn't bow to political pressure like Google apparently has done?
Unfortunately, it's not. I mean, I'm in touch with people in Europe who are trying to do that right now. But, you know, what they have is still in beta. It's very, very primitive. It's not really possible. What has to happen here is that we have to turn Google's search engine into a public utility. And there are lots of people saying this now. I've been saying it for a long time, but there are more and more people here saying it. There are Republicans here saying it. There are Democrats.
I think we lost Dr. Epstein there. Jan Olberg, go ahead, jump in.
Yeah, no, I would find that fascinating, too, a public utility or something under the United Nations or God knows what. But it cannot be in the hands of very powerful corporate people or a single minister somewhere in an authoritarian state. I do not think that this is a small issue. It's a matter of world peace, if you will, because without information, without free debate, without access to information, also critical information about all societies and things happening in the world, we're losing. We're losing as humanity. And that's why I think this, I'm really glad and happy that you're taking up this discussion here. I wish there was much more discussion in the Western mainstream media about this, because if anybody be concerned about these, you know, the things we're discussing here and Google's role and all that, it should be the media people. They're using it all the time, all the day, 24/7. And they're ending up writing crap in the media if they don't have access to real information. And also, by the way, in terms of international politics, do not travel the world anymore or have anything but stringers who you know, serve 50 newspapers or something like that.
We're going to have to leave it there. That was the voice of Dr. Jan Olberg. He's the director of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research. You can read his article, Why is Google's Eric Schmidt So Afraid, at Counterpunch. And we've been joined from San Diego by Dr. Robert Epstein. He is the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. After a short break, we'll be right back with Loud and Clear.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm John Kiriakou.
And I'm Brian Becker.
The police state in America continues to grow as more departments adopt the use of the controversial Stingray surveillance system. And the Trump administration escalates its war on immigrants by granting local police departments new powers to harass and arrest those suspected of being undocumented. We're joined from Chicago by Aislinn Borsini, an organizer with the Black Lives Matter movement. And we're also joined from Atlanta by Anna Wachanga. She's the director of politics and advocacy with Progressive Army, host of the radio show The Way with Anoa. Thanks, both of you, for joining us this afternoon. This is some really disturbing stuff. Stingray technology, it was originally developed for the military. It's highly secretive. Scores of police departments around the country are using it. Civil liberties and privacy groups are raising objections. But we've only scratched the surface of what this thing can do, what this technology can do to assault our civil liberties. What it does is it allows the police to mimic cell site simulators. And what they do is they sweep up cell phone data from entire neighborhoods by pretending to be cell phone towers. The police can determine, this is according to CBS News, the exact location of a phone without the user ever making a phone call or sending a text message or anything like that. Some versions of the technology can even intercept texts and calls or pull information that has been stored on phones. And now what we're seeing is the police using this technology to see if there are undocumented immigrants in any given neighborhood they happen to be patrolling. Let's start with Anna Wachanga. Is this something we're going to have to get used to?
We should never get used to this type of intrusion in terms of our civil liberties. With the Trump administration just building on tactics that have been previously used by the Obama administration in particular, I mean, we saw an increase in surveillance of activist groups and more progressive leftist movements under, you know, Barack Obama. We should never begin to accept this type of surveillance. Those who have been, you know, protesting against this type of work and the several lawsuits that have happened, at least going back the last couple of years, there was a Maryland case back in 2015 that looked at the legality of this. Just recently, a Brooklyn judge weighed in on saying that NYPD actually needed to get an eavesdropping warrant before being able to deploy a stingray, whether or not, you know, law enforcement is actually going to comply. I mean, this is going to be something we're definitely going to have to keep fighting, just like any other increased level of surveillance on civilian populations, as we've seen over the last several decades. So I would not advise anyone to say, oh, well, this is just the way it is. Not at all. This is definitely not just a Trump thing, but this is obviously being escalated under him.
And this is new law, actually, because in most cases, as you point out, it has not been challenged. In fact, the press has reported that many law enforcement organizations have gone to great lengths to conceal the fact that they're using stingray technology in arrests, to the point where they're offering plea deals just so that they won't have to admit in court that they've been using this device without a warrant. Let's talk to Aislinn Borsini. What's next with the use of these things? One of the problems, well, there are many problems. One of the problems with stingray technology is that it doesn't just target one individual. It can target an entire community or people who are physically located around that individual. 1 minute you're minding your own business, watching television. The next minute you're subject to arrest because of something that you may have had on your telephone.
Yeah, it's a complete violation of privacy. It's a, you know, and we've seen a continuation of these types of technologies being weaponized against various marginalized communities, various communities that have been engaging in resistance against the increase in repressive surveillance. Since 9/11 with the Patriot Act, there have been a lot of measures by the government that have been used in order to criminalize and weaponize Black and brown communities and activists and organizing communities. And I think that the stingray technology is one aspect of this trend that we have seen continuing over the past 10 years. Stingray technology has definitely been used in Chicago, as well as LRAD technology, which interrupts cell phone usage. They've used that definitely during some of the marches and actions that we've had where suddenly we weren't able to use our phones, and signal interruption, you know, was intentionally being used. We've had FOIA requests done, which have uncovered CPD tapping into phones of organizers. So we've known about this for a while. The fact that it's becoming more and more widespread is even scarier, and an indicator of increased repression and increased surveillance to come.
Brian Becker, CBS News and the New York Times say that at least 72 state and local law enforcement departments in 24 states plus 13 different federal agencies are using stingray technology. But details are hard to come by because the departments that use these devices have to take the unusual step of signing a non-disclosure agreement with the FBI. So it's the FBI that at the end of the day is behind this. The New York Times filed a Freedom of Information Act request in 2016 with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service asking if they use stingrays. The only response that they got, along with a denial of their request for information, was a statement, and I quote, "We will neither confirm nor deny the service use of stingray technology," period.
I think this is sort of a classic definition of a police state. I mean, seriously, I think that's hyperbolic. When you have federal government, FBI, secret police, making agreements with local police departments for extensive non-disclosure agreements, meaning that they're violating their agreement with the federal government if they disclose the existence of the use of stingray technology. Thus, even the courts have had a hard time when people have brought lawsuits. And the Court of Appeals in D.C., for instance, in the original big case, the Jones case, said the use of stingray technology was unconstitutional, a violation of the Fourth Amendment. But if we don't know about them, if it's all done in secret, then, you know, it's a police state because these are police agencies making disclosure agreements with each other. Then how do you file a Freedom of Information Act request, a public records request? that can disclose anything. Of course, we will. We'll try.
Sure.
Civil rights groups are trying, but it makes it all that much more difficult.
And what if you've been arrested for a crime and you file a Brady motion, right? Asking the law enforcement organization responsible for your arrest how they gathered the information, and then they either don't have to tell you or they can lie by not telling you
and
or by telling
a,
you that they didn't
what
use
they
it.
Call parallel construction.
Parallel construction.
Meaning they,
how is that constitutional?
They get the information through these illegal methods. In other words, an illegal search and seizure. You don't know how they got the information. They know they got it illegally. So they create a different sort of construct for how
sure.
they got it so they can take you to court.
They create a confidential source.
Anoa Changa, you're an attorney. The Fourth Amendment of the United States says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. But if a stingray technology allows the police in secret and the federal government through these non-disclosure agreements in secret to carry out what amounts to a search and seizure of people's communications through a whole community, through whole black and brown communities and against activists, not because people have done something or are suspected of carrying out criminal conduct, but simply because of whom they are, this is clearly illegal. I mean, it's a violation of the U.S. Constitution.
Absolutely. In theory, yeah, I would say that it could just be that simple on its face. But as we've seen, especially since September 11th, in the way in which Congress and the American people by default just gave away carte blanche access to the executive to reduce and constrain our civil liberties in this way. We've also seen over the last several years with the Supreme Court, a very stringent view of, you know, the notion of, you know, what's considered a reasonable what's considered unreasonable to overturn, you know, searches and seizures conducted by law enforcement and agents acting, you know, under their purview. And we continue to see, you know, our civil liberties being constricted in such a way that is in favor of the state and against the people. And it's not done, obviously, you know, even-handedly across the board. I mean, even though this is not directly on topic, when we look at what's happening right now with the group of J-20 defendants, that are facing this massive trial right now, process for protesting during inauguration weekend. I mean, we have seen an increasing, despite who has been in office, we've been seeing an increasing attack on those who can be relabeled under these new definitions created, you know, post 9/11 as dissidents, as people who are anti-American or whatever other language is used to now further criminalize what should be constitutionally protected action, you know, in any other scenario. So we really do have a serious issue and concern here. And this is where movement lawyers, where we need lawyers who are committed to, you know, liberation in its various forms, to really come to the forefront and step up and help, whether you're working through, there's so many different groups out there outside of the traditional bastion that is the ACLU. There's so many other organizations that do work. I was recently named to the board of National Conference of Black Lawyers. You have National Lawyers Guild. You have Movement for Black. You have a Law for Black Lives. You have so many different groups that have actually been working historically against these issues. And we're in a new age of COINTELPRO. It might not have the same name, but it definitely has the same chilling effect on people, movements, and the way we engage with each other. But furthermore, we have, with the technology, it is becoming increasingly simple for the federal government, for the DOJ, for others to not only track and infiltrate our spaces, but to be able to, you know, things that we're not even thinking about. Like, I've been looking at so many different groups now that actually do trainings on how to be safe cybersecurity wise if you're going to a protest. Like, something I just learned real quickly was that when I did a Lawyers Guild legal observer training, the iPhone, that thumbprint, that's not Fifth Amendment protected. right? So your Fifth Amendment right you have to self-incriminate against self-incrimination. If you're arrested and you use the fingerprint on your iPhone to log into your phone and they want to get into your phone, you can't try to later claim that that's a Fifth Amendment protection. Cause as, I mean, you can try to argue that, but they're going to be able to just get into your phone and it will most likely be deemed, you know, illegal search. And so there are all these things that we actually are giving up our rights in other ways that are making it very easy to not only infiltrate our spaces, but to criminalize our behavior. And so we have to be very clear about how we're moving, what we're doing, and what, you know, who is around us to help navigate some of these issues. So having law students, lawyers, paralegals, other folks who actually understand, folks like John who have had their own experience and understand the legal system from a different vantage point, to really help come together to build out a meaningful response. And this is another level of resistance that we've historically had, but now it's taking a new form and we have to keep pushing on that front as well.
You're absolutely right. Without getting too far afield, I've got to agree that this is COINTELPRO all over again. This is the FBI of the 1960s. Working with local police departments without the benefit of court orders or warrants to do literally whatever it is that they want to do. Now, there's been, as Anoa said, there's been one courageous judge in New York so far that put his foot down. But otherwise, we're not really seeing anybody in the judiciary, and certainly nobody in Congress, trying to protect our civil liberties.
Congress is worthless.
Worthless.
I mean, for Lemmings. This. I mean, and yes. Everything. Aislinn Borsini, you're there. You're talking about the impact of some of these policing tactics on your movement, on the Black Lives Matter movement, and on other social justice movements. I think it's important that when people hear the stories about the stingray, what they'll encounter is a media report that says, the stingray technology allowed us to catch a murderer or catch a rapist or catch somebody who really is doing bad things. And as a consequence, that's justifiable because we want to catch people doing bad things. But of course, the constitutional provisions against search and seizure are against the government overstepping, and we know the government will always overstep if they have no accountability. And so, of course, they'll always use some dramatic incident, some dramatic crime to justify these overarching police tactics. But the fact of the matter is, and you are there, you're on the front lines of that movement, the government has a tendency really to target those who are challenging the government, and especially those who are challenging the government in social justice and activist movements. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we can just look to recent history for examples of how this technology and how excuses to criminalize and advance, you know, reaches of the surveillance state into organizing communities and marginalized communities occurred during, you know, the 90s with the war on drugs, and then early 2000s with war on terror. Now we're seeing it used under the excuse of combating undocumented workers or illegal immigration, as they say. But clearly, it's always been used in order to advance these other goals. And the public relations component of it is to, you know, create some type of larger-than-life boogeyman to use as a reason why these, you know, extra-constitutional efforts need to be done, and as a way to kind of excuse these breaches into our civil liberties that should be protected. I think they've always used an excuse like that as a reason why certain rights need to be laxed or certain, you know, outcries need to be dampened in order to justify some sort of larger, you know, patriotic goal of eliminating drugs or capturing a terrorist. And that's always been the mantra that they've used. And it's always been to obfuscate what the real intents are and what the real dangers are, which is that it is used to criminalize everyday people who have every right to privacy, have every expectation that their communications will be private and protected from government scrutiny. And increasingly, as is the trend with increases in repression, we're seeing that being used on organizers. And with the invention, the FBI's invention of black identity extremists, it becomes even more troubling. And, you know, it's logical for us to expect that these types of things are definitely being used on organizers that the FBI has decided to label black identity extremists as a way to criminalize resistance work.
Yeah, and let's go over again, John. We're speaking with Asleen Borsini, an organizer with the Black Lives Matter movement in Chicago, and from Atlanta with Anoa Changa. She's the director of politics and advocacy with the Progressive Army and the host of the radio show The Way with Anoa. Let's go over for our audience. We're talking about the stingray, that is the police and the federal government, FBI, working with police in secret, setting up cell phone tower simulators so that our phones in a particular area where these phony cell towers are set up, these cell towers draw our phones into the cell tower, and that allows the police to track the movements and the place and the location and even the content of the communication for all of us within a particular area. These were, as you said, John Kiriakou, these were military technologies that have migrated from the battlefield back to the ultimate battlefield that the U.S. government seems to always fight on, which is bringing back military technologies and directing against its own people as if the people in the United States are the enemy.
Brian, I'm reminded of an interview that I saw a good 15 years ago with Dick Cheney, who, of course, at the time was vice president. And he said that he would rather see 10 innocent men go to prison than one guilty man not go to prison. I think that we've made this transition in our country, at least on Capitol Hill and in the policymaking community, where that is now the norm, where civil liberties are less important, where the government, especially in the form of our federal, state, and local law enforcement organizations, would rather jail 10 innocent people than miss jailing one guilty person.
Yeah, it should be the opposite. The whole point of the Constitution was the opposite.
Precisely.
Anoa, you're in Georgia. I was reading the article, I think it's in the Washington Post, about Jeff Sessions as the attorney general. The Democrats are all challenging him to find out what Russian he might have met with in the last, I don't know, year or two, like as if that's the, you know, the biggest issue in the world. And the article goes on to show that Sessions, meanwhile, quietly and without being challenged by the Democrats in Congress, has upped the arrest rate of immigrants, of undocumented people, by 40% since the last year, and where you are in Atlanta, by 80%, a reign of terror being directed against working class families. It doesn't matter if they've committed any crime, suspected of a crime, just because they're here. And of course, in Georgia, like in a lot of places, people were lured there for agricultural work when there was a need, when there's labor shortages. And now folks are being completely criminalized. And the same government, the DOJ, which is in charge of the FBI, using stingray technology to hunt down working class immigrant families so that they can be deported. And once arrested, these folks have almost no rights.
No recourse.
They have rights, but, you know, they don't have lawyers necessarily. I mean, it's a fundamental challenge to everything that the country says it stands for regarding constitutional law and democracy. And yet here we have another situation where it's against a targeted, demonized population. Just talk about what its impact is in Georgia.
Well, what's really interesting is that Atlanta itself, right, is heralded as Atlanta's so brave. It's a sanctuary. It's welcoming. It's open. There was actually a recent Atlanta's one of 10 jurisdictions that actually agreed to provide legal services for undocumented folks who end up with immigration issues. However, when we're looking at some of these things, some of these incidences, they're happening just a few miles, in some cases, right outside the Atlanta city limit. Like, if you think about, if anyone understands, who's listening, understands the geography, you know, like most major metropolitan areas, you know, you have your actual city proper, and then you have the surrounding other smaller smaller cities or suburbs that are generally thought of as being the as a part of that metropolitan area, but they have their own jurisdictions. There was an account I read recently that just 16 miles north of northwest of Atlanta, you had ICE raids happening. And it's true. They are just going after, you know, people who are just regular working class families. These are not necessarily, these are not an indication of any individuals that are in violation of any type of law or anything like that. And this is an area where they are ramping up because we have detention centers here that are being challenged by local activists and actually activists nationwide. Shout out to organizers and lawyers with Project South. But we see this need to fill, you know, basically it's the private prison industry in some aspects is driving also the demand on this side. We have two private detention centers here in the state of Georgia, which are an issue, which there are legal challenges mounting right now to organize around them. But looking at what they're doing and what they're saying is the problem and how they'll use. It's the same thing with how they use the be able to use the stingray in the first place, right? Oh, we're trying to protect people. Oh, we're trying to cut down on crime, do this and the other. But what's actually happening, and it's being put upon the most marginalized within our communities, right? These are people because of their status who are not allowed to vote. A lot of times people are not willing to raise their voices because they don't want to draw attention to themselves or their families because of their status. You know, folks are exploited and abused. And so it does become important upon, you know, grassroots organizing communities to help, you know, not just shelter, but to find a way to provide services, to inform, and to fight back on behalf or in conjunction with targeted individuals. So here in Atlanta, here in the South, but in Georgia in particular, you have this very weird, you know, carve out in terms of Atlanta and some of, I mean, really what's hypocrisy in the way in which, yes, Atlanta has, you know, allegedly has had this great attitude and approach towards the so-called Muslim ban and immigration issues. However, in our very immediate area, and Atlanta works in tandem with our surrounding areas. So for our surrounding areas to be participating and cooperating with ICE raids in this way, it makes it very, very difficult for Atlanta to really proclaim to be this great welcoming place when our metro area is actually so hostile. So there are, I am seeing that there are more activists, more organizers, there are lawyers really starting to ramp up activity on that front as well.
Aislinn, let me take this back to you. You know, we struggled through some of these issues in the 1960s and the 1970s. And frankly, it was only because of courageous action like the people who broke into the FBI's office in Media, Pennsylvania, for example, that finally exposed a terrible and unconstitutional illegal program like COINTELPRO. What's it going to take for Americans to realize that stingray technology is trampling their civil liberties, that Congress is doing nothing about it, that the law enforcement organizations in this country are going to keep pushing the envelope until somebody tells them to stop? How do we turn this around?
Well, I think we certainly have, you know, the fact that the technology that exists now has allowed us to become aware of stingray technology and aware of some of the other mechanisms that are being used in order to spy on citizens and people. It allows us a better ability to acquire a more up-to-date realization of how we're being surveilled. And I think that is unique. I think that we would be naive to assume that COINTELPRO was the end-all be-all of government surveillance on citizenry. I think, like you said, we are fortunate that we have that information thanks to the courageous people who broke into the FBI offices and were able to steal some of that. We've also been able to get some of that information through lawsuits against the government. But certainly much more exists that we don't know of right now. And certainly there's no reason to believe that any of that spying had took various forms in the 80s and the 90s. I think we know that that's true. I think now with the advent of the internet, there's a certain layer, there's a certain democratization that has allowed us to become to gain a stronger foothold on the development of this technology. And so while we know that it's being used to spy on us, and to spy on other vulnerable communities. We also know that there's active technology that's being created to try to combat it at the same time. I think that's a new playing field for us. I think the best thing that we can do as a people is to reassert our right to organize, to reassert our right to privacy, and to demand that our rights be protected at every level. And so whenever these cases come up, whether it be through a FOIA, whether it be through evidence that is coming to light, that we reassert and stand firm in our right to exist and to organize.
That's Aislinn Borsini. We've been joined by Aislinn and also Anoah Changa. I couldn't agree with you more. It's all about us, about what we do, whether we're willing to fight back, use the tools at hand, and we can do that if we are determined to do it. You're listening to Loud and Clear. We'll be right back after a short break.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.